This is the May 14 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Greg Johnson. He's a TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Out of Champaign, Illinois, Chip Nellinger is here from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois. And Brian Stark joins us from the Andersons. He travels between Mansfield, Illinois and Logansport, Indiana. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. Let's begin with the list of items that we should discuss for the day. Brian Stark, we'll pick up with you. What are you thinking about?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, I'd say, so what, now what, when it comes to the market break today. I think producers want to know kind of what the next move they should have for their old crop and new crop. And I think, as always, highlight cash basis direction, I think, on both of those commodities.
Of course, we are recording on a Thursday afternoon, May the 14th, after a large break in the marketplace. Chip Nellinger and Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, what's on your list?
Well, I think obviously the China situation, right? We don't have any clarity on that yet, but the market's starting to assume a few things. Still have to go back on crude oil. I think that very quickly we're going to have a little more clarity on what the direction is with Iran and the Strait of Hormuz. And obviously, weather is starting to take front and center as well, and will be for the next few months here. So no shortage of things to talk about here this week.
Greg Johnson from TGM, anything to add?
Yes, in addition to all those things, USDA came out with their monthly supply and demand report, which included the first estimates for this year's crop, the 26-27 crop, and I think there's some interesting numbers to look at, and we can go through some what-ifs.
Oh my gosh, that seems like such a long time ago this week. There's been so much happening. We should probably start with that, Greg, because it did happen Tuesday at 11 o'clock. It was the first big item of the week. What did USDA tell us about new crop?
Well, they told us that we're going to plant 3 million less acres of corn. That's based on the March survey. I personally think that might be a million acres too high. Then they're using a 183 yield. Last year we had a record 186.5. We're certainly not off to a record start by any stretch. Too dry in places, too wet in other places. So I'm not predicting a drought or a disaster by any stretch, but even if we shave a few bushels off of that 183, the government estimate was an ending stock number of 1.95. It wouldn't be too hard to imagine getting that down to a 1.6, 1.7, and that certainly supports corn and could make it interesting later on this summer.
Ooh, that's the weather thing we need to talk about eventually, Chip, but not just yet, Mr. Nellinger. So what was your assessment of the WASDE report?
Yeah, I agree totally with that. I thought a couple other things jumped out at me. Total corn demand, 150 million bushels less than a year ago. Total bean demand up a couple hundred million. A little bit of a head scratcher to me. Also, world corn carryout just shy of 20 million metric tons smaller from the new crop position. So, back to the previous point, there's no margin for error on any of these crops, particularly corn. I know all the arguments about, South American production is going to be bigger and we're going to lose our demand base. But on paper, there is just no margin for error on these crops going forward.
And then Brian Stark from the Andersons, any thoughts from you on that particular date?
Well, I think obviously we spent a lot of time, at least in my area, focused on corn and soybeans, but we all know that the wheat market, the expectation of the decline in some of the all wheat production, specifically in the plains from a hard redwood perspective, given the drought they've been in and a high abandonment acreage, looking at the harvested acres, down almost 4 million, certainly some abandonment there. And certainly, while it may be mostly a hard red wheat problem and a Kansas City futures problem, we all know a lot of the liquidity lies in the wheat market. And I think that certainly spurred things the day the report came out. And to me, wheat could be a leader, coupled with what Greg and Chip said on the corn side. That could also help support higher corn prices, depending on how the growing season weather shakes out.
It seems like a long time ago that we did have that move in the wheat market. However, I do want to talk about it just a bit more with you, Brian, because we do have the issues with the hard red winter wheat. Soft red winter wheat looks great. Spring, according to the meteorologist, wheat might be in trouble in those Great Plains states because it's dry there. They're running late and behind, too. That one was the one that led things really to the highest levels ever for wheat at one point in the not-so-too-distant past. It's a very small crop and very defined, so when it's short, it does create issues. How does that double up with what's happening with the hard red winter wheat?
Well, I think it certainly could be an accelerant. I think it really what it comes down to, Todd, is, you know, does 750 Kansas City wheat futures, you know, if you get to that point, does that slow down export on some of these specific classes and how we ration that? I think if you think about it, the world still has plenty of all wheat supply. So obviously we're discussing a class issue. And to your point, when one class tends to lead, the others follow, simply as a fund investment ploy. So certainly could be prices moving to maybe beyond fundamentals would dictate at some stage. And again, to my point, I think it certainly is a supportive factor overall to the other feed grain markets, depending on how that production shakes out.
Now let's turn our attention to what has happened overseas over the last couple of, a few hours, really, with the meeting between President Trump and President Xi. Not a lot of details. Secretary Bessent really simply saying, hey, what we've got is what already is what we're going to get. The trade didn't seem to take that very well, Greg Johnson, during the day-to-day in Chicago.
Really, could we have been surprised? I mean, Brazil soybeans are 75 cents cheaper than U.S. beans. China has invested a lot of money in the infrastructure down in Brazil. They're going to ship beans out of Brazil to China. The only possible reason why China would want to buy more beans is basically to throw President Trump a bone and say, you know, we'll give you this if this you think this will help your Midwest farmers, but in exchange, we want lower tariffs. And so maybe they're willing to spend a few extra $1 million to save billions in tariffs, but that would be the only reason. But from an economic point of view, China really didn't buy any more beans from the United States.
Jim Nellinger, anything to follow up on this U.S.-China detente in Beijing this week and what, I suppose, didn't take place?
Yeah, I think a couple things stood out to me. I think the market was a little bit disappointed that a lot of the meetings looked to be kind of pomp and circumstance and photo ops instead of multiple days of talks. I would tell you, though, that as we're recording this, you know, there is another couple hours of meetings scheduled for the morning in China, which is somewhere in the overnight hours here. And I'm sure on the plane back that President Trump is still going to have supportive things to say about it. So I don't think we've heard the end of it, but I think the market was a little bit disappointed that there weren't some immediate details in that, in that first full day of talks. Also, there was some stories that may have been a little bit old and recycled that President Trump had offered an invitation to President Xi to come to Washington in September. So I think that there was an assumption, and I don't know that this means it necessarily, there was an assumption the market thought, well, this isn't going to be an overnight fix here. This is going to last for several more rounds. It may take till fall to get something done here. So, you know, I don't think the news cycle's over. We could get plenty of tweets overnight that are just as supportive as today's action was negative. But, sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. And right now the market really doesn't seem very hopeful that there's going to be immediate, concrete bushel amounts of agreed bushels that China is going to purchase in the short run. And the market action today was pretty ugly, to say the least.
Again, we are recording at about 2:30 on Thursday afternoon, so things may have changed, particularly if the president had anything to say on the flight back from China, or if there were other releases from those additional meetings that have yet to take place. So let's turn our attention to a couple of other items that are in the marketplace. When the president returns, Chip Nellinger, I'll stay with you because this is on your list. We will be hearing, of course, about the Iran war again. And we did not hear anything, to this point at least, about what the Chinese had to say as it was related to the Strait of Hormuz. That's going to be back into the marketplace, and I don't know in what way. Probably we'll talk about fertilizer, of course. But what else are you thinking about?
Yeah, I think it was probably purposeful that we didn't see much this week ahead of these trade talks in relation to China. I think that's the other thing. It's not like that agriculture is the only thing they have to talk about. The Iran situation is probably high on the list. The Taiwan issue is probably high on the list. The fentanyl trade into the United States is probably high on the list. And so I really think, this is just my gut, that once we get into next week, we're going to find a little more clarity on what the goal, what the objectives are going forward as far as Iran and the Strait of Hormuz. Obviously, crude oil just seems kind of pegged right at the $100 a barrel level. That's too high. I mean, if we stay that level or higher for very much longer, I think there's already cracks in the world economy and the U.S. economy. It will only get worse. So I think we're going to see a little more, I would suspect we'll see a little more detail on what the plan would be this coming week. After these Chinese talks, to me, it seemed like things kind of quieted down on purpose going into these talks, and we'll see what came of it and what the president's attitude is towards Iran, I think, in short order.
Brian Stark, anything to add on that subject matter?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think some of the commentary that's came out this afternoon, although Chip's right, we need to get some more specifics, but certainly talked about maybe the president's gave a little bit of clue to his long-term direction of trying to get a little bit of pressure from China to apply pressure to Iran to help open the strait, but also maybe pivoting a different direction in exchange of potentially China buying more U.S. oil to reduce their reliance strictly on the Middle East for some of their energy needs. So I think it'll be interesting here in the coming days and week to gauge exactly what came of the meeting. A lot of different directives other than the lack of information on the ag side of things. But I think that's going to have certainly impact as the world economy goes, and obviously will spill down into commodity prices here as time goes on as well.
Greg Johnson has disappeared for just a bit. Some technical issues there. Hopefully he'll be able to return to our program. We'll see whether that takes place or not. I do want to follow up on the cash basis levels that you've been following, Brian, and you wanted to talk about. What things do you have on your mind today?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about this in the past month, 6 weeks, both during the show and then also directly with a lot of farmers in East Central Illinois, West Central Indiana. I think, you know, in the heart of the Corn Belt, seasonally basis tends to strengthen as the farmer's been focused on field work. I think that still maintains itself, given a lot of end user demand has been hand to mouth with some of the rally in the board futures price, as well as, you know, the higher basis levels that we've seen over the last 4 to 6 weeks. There's a lot of coverage that still needs to be had. And typically speaking, some of the best basis opportunity for producers and commercial facilities happens during this May to first part of June timeframe. And as busy as we've been, especially in the last week to 10 days, when we finally got an open window in the East to resume planting in a big way, I just want to mention to the producer, for those that still have unpriced stocks sitting on farm, which year over year, based on our last stocks report, are higher. We certainly don't want to miss an opportunity where some of the best basis levels may occur. We know that another wave of grain movement is coming post-planting, whether that be late June, or post-pollination in mid-July. So we need to take advantage of those levels and while the end user's hungry to lock in coverage.
Well, Chip Nellinger, that will be a big ask, I would think, from farmers. It is unlikely that they will decide that that's what they want to do, mostly because they've held on for this long. Should they, though, really think more about moving some of the old crop grain that they have in storage off the farm?
Well, I think if they haven't to this point, to your point earlier, they may be resigned to the fact that they're going to hold it through summer to see if there's a weather problem. But should they or not, I think, is your question. I think today is a perfect example. We don't get quite the right news from China, and or crude oil would take a drop back towards the 80s or below. You're going to relax a lot of the inflation type money that's flown into our ag markets. You're going to probably reduce the fund long position, and you're going to have a correction that may be a little bit hard to sit through. I think it does depend on where you're at. The further east you go in the Corn Belt, the better corn basis has been. Almost feels like they're out of stocks over in the far eastern Corn Belt. Far western Corn Belt, still sitting 35 to 40 under. Doesn't seem like it's, you know, there's any shortage of all. And, you know, here in Illinois, we're kind of sitting right in the middle of it with some okay basis. So I think it depends on where you're at. I think we are at the point, though. I mean, you look at a normal seasonal, whether you cut it 5 years or 15 years or 30 years, we are basically a few days past when we typically put a spring peak in. It doesn't mean we can't revisit it or go higher this summer, but you know, I think producers just need to be prepared that if things don't fall in on a bullish tone here, you could see a pretty healthy correction, even if there's ultimate higher highs coming. It may be a gut check to sit through that if we see that.
Greg Johnson has returned to our conversation. Thank you for coming back, Greg. I know yesterday on Wednesday when you and I talked during the closing market report, we had $12 $12 November soybeans and $5 December corn futures, and you reminded farmers then that they probably should take advantage of that. Basis levels remain fairly good, as Brian Stark has told us, but it depends on where you are, as Chip said, across the Midwest. What are you telling producers right here in East Central Illinois today?
I think you have to look at the big picture. The big picture is we probably are going to plant more soybean acres. We have to wait till June 30th to get that acreage number, but I think we're 1 million acres too high on corn. I think we're 1 million acres too low on beans. If that's the case, we want to be a little bit quicker on the trigger to get beans sold. I think beans, November beans, are in a 1050 to 1250 type of range. And as you said, we hit $12 this week. So that's closer to the top end of the range than the lower end of the range. So I am encouraging producers to reward this rally. Anything close to $12 futures probably is not a bad place to sell beans. Corn, on the other hand, 1 million less acres of corn, some potential weather problems. You know, I think December corn could be a 450 to 550. I'm not predicting that it's going to go to 550, but if we have weather issues, we could see that. So we're at 491 right now. We're kind of right in the middle. So not as urgent of a situation to sell corn. There's nothing wrong with getting a percentage of corn sold. And again, old crop corn is a little bit different than new crop because you're probably going to have to hold on, as I think as Chip said, for another couple of months to see if anything changes. There's plenty of stocks out there right now, so it's probably going to boil down to a weather problem, and we aren't going to get a weather problem in May and probably not in June. It's going to be a July, August type of thing. So depending on how long you want to hold on to corn, old crop corn, it may pay to hold on to. But new crop corn, I think you can afford to be patient. If you haven't sold anything, there's nothing wrong with selling something at $5. I do think at some point in time, we'll see something better than $5 if we have any kind of weather issues at all later on this summer.
Chip, we've had a very busy week. What do we have to look forward now over the next week? Will things calm down?
I don't think they calm down at all, Todd. I think that this Iran situation, the Straits of Hormuz, is going to, you know, probably pick up something that adds more volatility here, whether we, whatever the decision is. You know, I don't think we sit at $100 crude oil very, very much longer. We're either going to have an escalation higher or we're going to find a resolution and go lower. That's going to drive a lot of fund money flow. And then weather, is the next thing. We've struggled to get this crop in areas. It hasn't gone in maybe in the best conditions. We catch some rain here going into late week and over the weekend. Maybe that'll, heal some of the ugliness out there, or heal some of the problems and allow some of this crop to get up and growing. But, to Greg's point earlier, I don't think that you could say we're necessarily off to the absolute best start ever. So, Todd, I don't see a relaxation in this volatility anytime soon. I think it's going to continue. I think this Iran thing is going to take some time to figure out. And I think the weather is far from some certain as well. We mentioned earlier, there's just not much room in the balance sheet on either corn or beans to have much less than a trend line yield, in order to keep stocks at pretty adequate levels here.
So, Brian Stark, I do want to talk about some of the backyarditis, and really this is backyarditis across the whole of the Midwest because of the really warm temperatures earlier in the spring, cold temperatures then after a crop got planted. For both corn and soybeans, you travel a couple of hours across Illinois and Indiana each and every week. I suspect both the corn and the soybeans look fairly ragged. How much can you row at this point, and how does it look to you?
Yeah, I think driving around, obviously, it's very sporadic, just based on what we've described. Greg and Chip have hit on it. I think you had some crop that got in early. We've been obviously wet in some spots, and it looks like it's just been planted and caught up this week. So various stages. We certainly haven't planted this crop all in a week window like we've had in years past. So you're going to have some variation. I think the one thing I've seen out of the corn that's emerged, the beans that have emerged, the stands look really good. I think part of the challenge is what you hit on earlier. We haven't had the warm temperatures. So a lot of the corn is yellow, looks ragged as you described, but I think it's something that can be cured with heat and certainly continued moisture. I know in some areas where they planted in less than ideal conditions, some customers have talked about having to go out and rotary hoe because their faucet shut off for a short period of time and developed a crust in certain areas, more towards the western corn belt than the east. But we certainly have gotten off to maybe a clunky start. I don't know necessarily if it's a poor start, but certainly not ideal. And certainly weather is going to play a big role, just as Chip said, across the spectrum as we move forward. I think this week certainly helps, but the crop will definitely benefit from the warmer temperatures here as we proceed through the month of May.
We will probably be talking about a very different looking crop by the time we get to Thursday or Friday of next week, given the amount of heat that is going to come into the Corn Belt and across the Midwest. What other things have been on your mind or that farmers have been asking Greg Johnson over the last couple of days as it's related to marketing corn, soybeans, maybe the crops in Brazil, because we have not discussed the issues they've been having there in part of their Safrinha or second crop corn?
Yeah, the jury's still out on the double crop corn out of Brazil. It turned off dry. Not everywhere, but I'd say maybe a third of Brazil of that double crop corn is questionable at this point. Not a disaster by any stretch, but they could be lowering that crop a little bit. But again, a lot of that will be offset by Argentina's bigger crop. In fact, this week, not only did the USDA raise their estimate by 7 million metric tons, but now one of the private analysts out of Argentina raised it another 2 million metric tons on top of that. So the crop seems to be very good, and that's going to solve a lot of problems. So I don't want to get too worked up about how we get started. I think it's more important for this corn and bean crop how we finish in July and August rather than how we get started. We're going to get it planted. It's going to come up. Farmers are not going to be happy. It's not going to be perfect, so they're not going to be happy. But we're a long ways from getting done, and just keep the big picture in mind. It's not how we start, but how we finish.
Brian Stark, I have a question about ethanol. The Andersons, of course, have been heavily involved in that part of the marketplace this week. The House of Representatives passed permanent year-round E15 legislation. Still needs to get through the Senate. Not completely clear that that's an easy path forward. May very well not be. However, some of the numbers that get touted on this issue seem to be very out of line to me. For instance, 2.4 billion bushels more use of corn at full adoption. What is the likelihood of full adoption of E15? I would think that would mean it's in every gallon of gasoline that is used in the automobile fleet in the United States. What number is a better number to think about, do you suppose?
Well, I think the way I would look at it, Todd, and obviously everybody has a differing opinion. I think, one, let's talk about what you mentioned with E15 passing, which is a great thing for potential future corn demand, but it only passed by 12 votes. And I think, to your point, that the Senate is going to be a little tougher sell, maybe a flat exchange. The president has said, obviously, he would sign the law into place if it does. But I think it's something from an infrastructure standpoint that is going to take time to implement. Because to your point, I think that's probably right, that it's every gallon. And we know that the U.S. and the infrastructure takes time. Could it be 5 years down the road, 7 years down the road? Certainly isn't going to be as big of an impact immediately as maybe as a lot of people have calculated. Is from a corn demand perspective. But, you know, maybe it's an 11% or a 12% overall blend as you start to stair step into it. But it's going to take time to get to E15, you know, nationwide. And so I think some of the initial demand, while it is certainly positive, I don't want our listeners not to think that it's not. It is. It's not something that, you know, immediately you're going to wake up the next day and we're going to have an additional 2 billion bushels of corn demand.
Let's get to some final thoughts from each of you now. Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri Marketing. I'll start with you for the day.
Well, Todd, sometimes I feel like I'm a broken record sometimes, but I think that as producers obviously are busy in the field right now, don't take your eye off the ball on the markets. I think a lot of producers have rewarded the rallies, cleaned up some old crop, have a good start on new crop. We do see a sharp break into the end of May. It offers some opportunities to maybe come back in and create some minimum price contracts or buy some calls against some previous sales to roll puts down. My point is, use the volatility to maneuver in this and don't get handcuffed by it. And don't be afraid if we keep going higher. Remember where we were last fall and last January. It felt like we would never see $4.50 again. Now we've seen $5. Don't let that slip past our fingers if we would continue to go higher on some additional volatility into the end of May here. Don't be afraid of the volatility. Use it to your advantage as much as possible.
Greg Johnson, your final word for the day?
I'm going to speak to the three or four producers that grow wheat. Maybe there's a few more now, but I realize wheat's not a big deal. But wheat prices have really rallied. Even with the sell-off this week, we saw 675 July 26 futures. And I'm not a big proponent usually of looking a year ahead, but July 27 wheat was trading at 722. You could probably get pretty close to $7 cash right out of the field for July 27 delivery. So don't take your eye off of the 27 crop. I think the market is offering us some pretty good incentive to not only grow wheat, but to sell wheat at these higher levels.
On that note, I do follow a spring wheat grower in the far northwestern part of Minnesota who today on X said, sell wheat and be happy about it. So it might be something of interest there as well. Brian Stark of the Andersons, your final word.
Yeah, I'll tag on a little bit to what Chip said. I think ultimately this period from between now and the third week of June, seasonally we tend to put in our best opportunities to sell, whether it's old or new crop, remaining stocks, or thinking ahead to the crop you just planted. And I just want to highlight and tag on to my earlier comments. I think even if you're friendly and find it hard after a big sell-off like this week to lock in futures, you can manage your basis and futures independently. And I think that's the point I was trying to make, that basis is important on the old crop stocks
to protect when the end user's hungry, even when you're busy planning, thinking ahead, locking those in, but also remain fluid. I think, you know, floor ceiling strategies make a ton of sense when we're dealing with a lot of volatility, and I don't think volatility is going to go away anytime soon during the growing season. So that's what my recommendations would be.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Brian Stark of the Andersons, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, and Greg Johnson at TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.